Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales. Natalie has been in the top 1% in the country for over 25 years and number one in Hawaii for 2 years prior to stepping back to building Realty Universal. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And she joins us now. Hey, Natalie.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here another week and have such an exciting show today. So those of you who are getting used to this nice weather, it seems to be good weather pretty much everywhere we are, depending on where you are in the world, and enjoying lots of it. And today we are going to, instead of breaking up our show, which usually we do half real estate, half self-help and community issues, we are going to spend the entire time talking about a little bit about politics and what's going on in the world today, the season of politics. Now, how it affects you, how it affects real estate in you. Carl Fazio is our guest today, and I'm so excited to bring him on. We're going to really dig in today and just have a casual conversation and go through a lot of different details that are going on today in today's world. Politics has changed so much, but the foundation hopefully is still the same. And for those of you who'd like to call in, the call-in number is 347-945-5428. So politics, are you involved? Does the climate of today's politics make you shun away or light a spark on you to do, under you to do more? It's been crazy in my opinion. Carl Fazio, who's been serving the public since the 1980s, is going to shed light on the subject. He was employed in the public relations department of Locust Mountain Treatment Center years ago in the 80s and mayor of Beaver Meadows in Pennsylvania, not just one term, but three terms. He was an avid entrepreneur. Yes, everybody's in. Yeah, an avid entrepreneur, owning a bar, nightclub, involved in Penn Forest Township Board in the Poconos area, serving on multiple committees, author, father, and husband, goes into details on why we need to be involved and not just sit on the sidelines. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome Carl Fazio. Hey, how are you?
Well, I'm great, and thanks for the opportunity to share my views with you and your listening audience. First of all, let me congratulate you on having this show and listening to your resume being introduced. I'm impressed myself, having known you for many years. I'm impressed when you have it all itemized. What can I specifically tell you politically?
You know what? I love having you on today because you have literally There's people that, you know, go and live and do and do and do, and we have families, and you know, a lot of people live the day-to-day, live their businesses, and, you know, like me, for one, I always feel like I'm not really serving enough. I'd really like to make a difference in a larger way, so we do it through real estate in our programs. But you've literally been devoted to serving your whole life, and you've stayed in the political arena. You go in and you volunteer and get on committees. So I just wanted to, you know, talk about what you've done, because what you've done, you've been a leader in that, and you're very involved and you understand it. One thing that I notice, now we're in this, you know, we're in election years, right? We're in all the crazy politics and the people are running, and things are very different from when I was younger, because when I was younger, we didn't have politicians mudslinging each other. It usually seemed a lot more professional, but it's a very difficult field to be in, and you understand it, and that's why I wanted to talk to you about what's your take on what's happening today in politics and where it's come from. So I guess the first question would be, back when you first got into it, versus today, do you see a big difference, or do you see the light at the end of the tunnel?
Yeah, I certainly do, because when I went into politics, not actually gone into politics, but at the age of 21, and by the way, you had to be 21 years old to vote when I was 21, a long time ago, and I went in with an open heart, just wanting to do my civic duty. So I had an uncle that was involved in the Democratic politics in Hazleton, Pennsylvania. And he came to me and he wanted me to vote for the Democratic mayor who was running for re-election. So I did. But after voting, I started to get more of an interest in other than just voting. And with that, I went to my first Democratic committee meeting. And I must say that I was really disappointed. I went there with an open mind, thinking, oh boy, I'm interested, but these guys are really going to tell me why I should be interested in their party and why I should get people interested in registering to vote and why I should tell other people to vote, how to motivate people to vote. I was disappointed because I didn't learn anything. The only thing I learned was that they were interested in telling me to get the vote out, but not telling me why.
Wow.
So years passed, and I was not really engaged in politics too much other than voting every year as I felt my duty. Later on, I was living in a small borough of Wedderly, Pennsylvania, and in Wedderly, Pennsylvania, I got involved into the Republican Party. Now, I thought, this is going to be my chance. I'm going to go to a Republican committee meeting, and they're really mm-hmm. going to tell me, motivate me and enlighten me and tell me why I should be voting and motivating others to vote and get involved in their government. Guess what?
Same thing.
Wow. They did not enlighten me one bit. They didn't tell me why I should vote, why I should tell other people to vote, why I should motivate people. So I went away pretty much empty. So later on, so now we got to skip time. So if you want the chronology, I can give you the chronology.
Yeah, or do you want to jump
to modern politics?
No, let's go through the chronology. It's very interesting, isn't it? And
okay.
I'm glad you kept going, because some people might have just said, I'm not doing this. They didn't explain it, and I'm dropping it. So I'm glad you kept going.
Well, I continued to vote every year as was I thought my duty, but really being a little bit passive, I remained in the Republican Party for a while, and then I got disenchanted as being a Democrat, because I sincerely believe in social justice, and I believe in the middle class, and I believe in opportunities for everybody. And, of course, it wasn't until I stopped working in the humanities and went into business with a tavern, owning a tavern and things of that nature. Was there when I was approached by some community leaders and asked me to run for mayor. And I was kind of shocked by that, and I said, well, okay, but I don't really know what the duties of a mayor would be. And the only promise I could make to the people was that I would promise that I will not do anything to hurt the community, only to help it. So I served 3 terms as a mayor, 2 consecutive terms, 1 off term, and then went back for a 3rd term. But what I learned, which I think a lot of people have come to know, which leads into modern politics, through those years I learned, and I could see the gradual morphing of sincere political intentions into corruption, political corruptions, and those were happening.
Is that because they say that politicians get in and then they have no choice but to turn the other way. Why is that?
Well, why that is, I guess, is money is still a great motivator. And money coming from large donors motivates politicians to think their way and do their bidding. Well, out the window goes the government for the people, of the people, and by the people. And you could see that happening kind of gradually. And I started to feel at that time, I remember thinking, no matter what you are, if you're a Democrat or a Republican, they're going to break your heart because they're not really sincere in taking care of the real needs of the American people. So this was starting to develop in me. And, of course, after my years as being a mayor, I into the humanities, worked with the humanities, which I loved all the time, got out of the business, and I moved to the Poconos. And here I sit in the Poconos in the quiet forest community, which I love. I have the deer visiting me on my back porch and the squirrels and the turkey running around. All of that nice poetic stuff. But then I got involved again in the
Did you get
the
bored?
Democratic.
Did you get bored? At that kind of? Is that why you got back into things? Or
no, I went, I was still in the county, my political origins. And in the county, I got onto the Democratic Executive Board, and I can see how all they wanted people to be was to be booster members for their incumbents. And I didn't like that. I said, because I think, we should be reaching out to everybody for the newest and the brightest people in the party. But all they wanted to do was protect incumbents. And incumbents become enriched the longer they're involved in the party politics. So, and the people around them just keep supporting them blindly. All of this we're talking about, we wind up today what is going on is dramatics in the presidential race. And we see in both parties, we see the majority of the people on the Republican right feeling betrayed and opting for Donald Trump. And on the left-hand side of politics, we see Mr. Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders, independent from Vermont. And he is bringing into the fold the disaffected people from the Democratic Party. People have been feeling alienated. They no longer have a voice. So you can see that going on today. So what we now have is the culmination of the dirty, corrupted underbelly of both political parties.
People are getting mad. Yeah.
People are angry. They're depressed. They're feeling betrayed. Things are happening in our country. Like, our infrastructures are falling apart. And all we keep on doing is cutting the top 1% incomes, giving tax breaks and losing jobs to other countries. And I got to blame both parties for that, and I don't want to be partisan in this radio show.
That's okay. You can be partisan, though, because
Both parties are responsible. And what happened to the middle class? The middle class is disappearing from the landscape. The middle class, and I'm going to tell you, and this I'm probably going to get some backlash, but both parties are responsible. I want to start with Ronald Reagan. Everybody loved Ronald Reagan, but Ronald Reagan and jump back to President Clinton, those two presidents, one Republican, one Democrat, were the worst possible presidents for the middle class. They may have done good things in other areas, but for the middle class, they both destroyed.
Okay.
So I'm going to tell you, Ronald Reagan, when he took office in August of 1981, the first thing he did was fire 11,000 striking air controller workers. Now, the merits of that decision may have been okay, but what it did was it started the take-back era. It started the union-busting mentality throughout the nation. And anybody who was ever in any union can remember after that happened, management started saying, we can fight these. We can take things back. So they started taking back insurance, making you pay co-pays in insurance, things of that nature, maybe giving back a holiday, maybe giving up a percentage of whatever. That started. So he did that. And another thing Ronald Reagan did was he reduced the 78% top income tax rate down to 28%. Now, all that percentage of incomes, taxpayers were taking away from the functioning institutions of the country. You cannot have a big country and not be able to fund its government. So that started. And then, of course, he followed that up by telling us that we need to have he tried to rationalize that by saying we would have trickle-down economics, that this would all happen, and that never did happen. That never did happen until today, and we can see what has happened. Okay, now, with Clinton, pick on the party, let's go to Clinton, who's the Democrat, The so-called charismatic Democrat, and I have a picture with the guy, so I can tell you, he is charismatic.
Very charismatic, yeah.
But what happened, what did he do? The first thing he did, which is an anti-progressive movement, was push for NAFTA. And I'm scratching my head at the time thinking, why the hell is a progressive pushing for NAFTA? Because we know what's going to happen. It's got to take away jobs in this country. And it did. So then what does he do after that? He comes in with and he buys into this welfare reform thing. Okay, that's great. Welfare reform. He teamed up with Newt Gingrich, and between them, they took away the rights of mothers to go to school. Instead, they had to take a job to feed their families. All right, so there's a lot of bad
things
happened
there. They did away
from that,
okay.
So it's an anti-middle-class thing. And so what does he do then? Now he comes out with a crimes bill. The crimes bill, of course, he didn't push the crimes bill, but he praised the crimes bill, if you read up on it. And that crimes bill, of course, put more people in prisons today than any other country in the world. So,
and
if you look at it different ways, it became a racist type movement. So
that's
then what does he do after that? He pushes what is called the Telecommunications Act. Now, what does the Telecommunications Act mean to us? Now, if you talk to anybody in the street today, they don't trust Congress. They don't trust the presidents,
no.
They don't trust the administration,
no.
They don't trust the Supreme Court, and they don't trust media. Why is that they don't trust media? The Telecommunications Act allowed for what is called cross-ownership. That little language.
Oh, I didn't know
cross
that.
Cross-ownership allowed, well, say, like, give you an example, say Walmart wanted to buy NBC or something of that nature. So what happened is these corporations were buying up media. I think there's all of the five media networks in the country are owned by five people. So what happened now is the people are now no longer having freedom of the press. They're
so
having censored press. You
that's
have censored
CNN,
press.
Yeah, CNN and Fox, where there's such a different slant.
Okay, so now that's Clinton. One
wow,
final
I didn't
thing.
Know
what
that.
Did Clinton do? All these things he's done so far were anti-middle class agendas.
Wow.
Now, here,
and you wouldn't
now,
think that for Democrats.
Yeah, I'm a
you
Democrat,
wouldn't think that
but
for
I'm telling you, I'm
you
criticizing
think that
my
for
party.
Democrat. You know what, no, but I'm saying you wouldn't think for a Democrat that he would have gone in that direction.
Well, no, because that, he was betraying, through the powers of the presidency, he was betraying the people's interests. So here's one thing that he did that took the lid off the cookie jar, for a metaphor. But anyway, he signed the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act. The Glass-Steagall Act was a fire line that was it's brought into government by President Franklin Roosevelt on the heels of the stock crash and the Great Depression. And the reason for that was to prevent commercial banks from investment banks from commingling and utilizing for you put money in your bank, the banks were not allowed to take your money and get involved in derivatives.
Okay.
So Roosevelt did that, and it was with two senators, Glass and Steagall, that had that act. And that act stayed in process up until 1999, a little better than 60 years. So we had 60 years of safety from any kind of a stock crash or a major depression. Okay.
Okay.
So after, So what happens? Clinton signs a repeal. 8 short years later, by 2008, we have the biggest financial disaster since the Great Depression.
See, I didn't. On the real estate side, we saw how the loans, you know, they put the other X in to loosen up the loan guidelines in the 90s, right, which really hurt and led to the crash because everybody and anyone, if they breathed, could get a loan because of the
exactly.
restrictions.
Subprime lending.
Loose.
They were
yeah.
all kinds of
and that
creative
was that.
Ways.
That was in Clinton's area. But I didn't know this. Glass-Steagall
Act.
Yeah,
that's another.
Wow.
But these things all were anti-middle-class agendas. Now, what happened, I'm going to take you back to the 80s, and in the 80s, The DNC, the Democratic National Committee, somehow splintered off and became, they still exist, but they developed what was called the Democratic Leadership Council. And that council, okay, they rationalized, you know, like the unions are dead. They're going to say, well, unions are a thing of the past. We got to get into the high-tech world, and we got to get into people making big money on high-tech. So they said, we will go after, side with corporations, but we won't go for the top 1%. We'll go for the top 10%. So they became corporate Democrats. Mm-hmm. And that change you have slowly seen starting with President Clinton. It began with Reagan, but you could see, he put the lid on a cookie jar with Clinton. And we've had that since. And it's just been disappointing to me, and I can understand why people are feeling betrayed, and people are gravitating towards Trump, and on the other side, gravitating towards Bernie Sanders.
Seems like a lot of younger
generation.
So
now my mouth
generation.
Is dry, I'm talking too much.
That's right. No, you're fine. Take some water. See, these allergy seasons have been tremendous here on the East Coast. I'll tell you. Well, the Bernie Sanders. It seems like a lot of the younger, the millennium kids are going towards
the
Bernie
college
Sanders.
Students,
They
say what they want. So, well, the college students don't. They don't vote, but they do vote, and their eyes are being opened because they're feeling denied and deprived, and they're feeling they have no future. And that's sad. So that's the giant that's being awoken.
That's what's going on? Because years ago, I mean, things were more settled, it seemed. I mean, we've always had the ups and downs, but right now it really is. It's a very sleeping giant that seems to be people have had enough, you know?
Well, that's the revolution that Bernie Sanders is talking about. He wants to bring these people, everybody that is enlightened by what's going on, enlightened by the corruption and the bad deals, to come into politics, to stand up and be counted and be heard. And I think they are. I think they're starting, the movement has started.
You know, it's funny because I think a lot of people, it's amazing how many people do not realize why we vote and why we need to vote. When you talk to masses of of course, you've been in this for years and years, but there's so many people that skip voting. They don't realize the difference that it makes. What is your take on that? What could you say? Because I thought years back I thought it would be so nice, and this is never going to happen because they even want dead people to vote. It would be so nice if we were all required as United States citizens to take like an hour to a 3-hour course, even if it was on video on the computer right now, about why we vote, how your vote counts, what's the purpose
behind
it?
I've actually started to write something about that. And my feeling that is people should be rewarded by some kind of, for example, if you don't vote, you get penalized. You have to pay a fine for not voting. If you do vote, it's your right to vote, but if you do vote, you get some kind of maybe a percentage of an income tax break or something of that nature. But there's got to be some incentive, something to make these people say, I got to go out and vote.
Yeah, because obviously
the opposite. When you would think that the American way would be to do everything possible to accommodate voters getting to vote, they seem to be wanting to obstruct people from going to vote. If you go, some of these things where they just take away one voting precinct and force it to a plethora of voters into another precinct, changing locations, doing everything they possibly can to dissuade people from getting out to vote. And we know the demographics that they don't want voting. But you're right. America will never be great unless everybody starts to participate in voting. You know,
I didn't like how, like I know what the governor of Virginia just was allowed to sign that inmates can vote. I guess that's different in different places.
Mm-hmm.
I
well, it is
I
different
in
different places.
Yeah, I have a problem with them being able to do it right now when we're in that period. You know, I could understand once somebody's elected president during that term changing it, but they're in the middle of changing it. It just doesn't seem fair. You know, our grandfathering in, different things are just, it seems to me that we seem to be moving further and further from our Constitution, and that's what everything was founded on. What's your take on that?
To begin with, the Constitution, when the Constitution was written, not everybody wasn't allowed to vote. At that time, even women were not allowed to vote. Only property owners were allowed to vote.
Right, women weren't allowed to vote.
If they had been married and had a child and got a divorce, they didn't have any rights to the child. There were a lot of things, a lot of rights that women were denied. And the Constitution, one of the amendments, maybe the 18th or 19th with the women's suffrage, where they got the right to vote, and that was through a lot of hardship fighting. But in general, it makes more sense to me to do everything possible to make more people vote. Like, for example, why only have one day a week or working day? Why not have voting all week long? Why not have voting on weekends? Why not have voting to make sure everybody has a chance to vote?
I agree. It's just, what is your take on our Constitution kind of dissipating in a way? I mean, I know it. There's so many things, and of course we go through the local courts, and the, you know, you've got the district court, and go all the way up, and you go circuit courts, and then you've got your, I mean, your Supreme Court, and
Superior Courts.
Yeah, what do you think? Do you think we're eroding our Constitution? I mean, so many different things are changing. It's like whatever floats anyone's boat is starting to come into the world now in the United States.
Yeah, well, the Constitution is a wonderful document. It's the foundation of a great country's democracy. But it gets in the way of people who want to circumvent the Constitution. And they'll come up with ways that the Constitution disallows what they want to do. Enterprisingly, they try and find a way to knock the Constitution or circumvent the Constitution. And unfortunately, we have a thing called the Supreme Court. Fortunately, we have a Supreme Court.
Right.
But unfortunately, we have a Supreme Court, which is being more of a political court than it is being interpreters of the letter of the law. You know, so they're divided. We have a court now. We have 4-4 in a court today. Divided. They're divided evenly now. But the big fight over this election coming up is going to be who gets appointed to that Supreme Court. And hopefully the right will hope that they get a corporatist in there, and the left will be hoping to get a liberal in there, a progressive.
What's your take on the fact that, you know, the Republicans are saying, hey, we're not letting anybody in anyhow. It's not going to happen until after the election. What do you think?
That's just a silly stall tactic, and I think they'll pay the price for that. The people want the government to work. And that's a mechanism of the government where the Senate, United States Senate, has to confer and counsel on a nominee for the Supreme Court. They're just not doing it. It'll go into committee, and the committee will stall. They won't bring it out to the floor for a full vote. And
they
won't have hearings.
It's
just a superficial stall. It's so obvious.
Well, to me, I know being in real estate all these years, you know, you really get into seeing how the politics affects us, the taxes and the property. And, you know, I deal a lot in Hawaii and Maryland, and the way it's run is different in each state, of course, a little bit. And I know you have townships, right?
In Pennsylvania, we have 1,550 townships.
Okay, and that's a little different than a lot of the way that they run. I know in Pennsylvania.
If I understand your question, townships are more rural forms of government. Then we have boroughs, which are smaller towns, and we have cities, which are larger populated densities. So we have those three types communities in Pennsylvania.
Which is really nice, but I know, for example, like taxes, property taxes, when people are buying in Pennsylvania, they'll talk about on the real estate side, well, there's also a school tax and this tax and this tax and this tax,
right.
And you have to find out what all your taxes are so you know what you're going to be paying, what your budget, what you're going to pay, and For example, Hawaii has lower property taxes. Maryland has higher property taxes. You know, each state is different. But I think it's really important for people to understand how all of this affects their day-to-day life, the politics, you know, and who gets in, what politicians get in, what their stance is, what they believe in, what they don't believe in. You know, I think sometimes when I'm talking to the general public, you know, people think we just need to vote for the president. You know, we don't have to worry about the local elections, which is nothing further than the truth, right? We really need the local, we need the communities involved. So what would you say to people that are out there and they're not involved in politics at all? They're running their lives. They don't even, you know, get into it. Would you recommend that they just start by joining a committee or just volunteer an hour a week or an hour a month or read books? I mean, what would you recommend? Because you're in it, you understand it. But I think many people are just not involved.
I would recommend all of the above.
Okay, you would?
The fact that it's a hard thing because the person you described as a lethargic person that has no interest in government apparently has an interest in their daily life,
right.
Their job, whatever they're doing, is too busy. But what I would say to that person, if they can hear me, is you better take your head away from the grindstone, look up at the political world out there, because they're hard at work to destroy what you're doing, and you may wind up one day without that beautiful lifestyle you think you have.
So what do we do? What do we do? I mean, because I think there's a lot of people
just
because of timing, not realizing, hey, you know how you hear constantly say people want to volunteer, want to do this, oh, I don't have time. Well, even an hour a week helps, you know. So would you get involved in your community, I guess the PTAs, the schools, the Chamber of Commerce?
That was one of the first lessons I learned when I was taking business courses and everything, that you get involved in your community, especially if you have a business, you do get involved in your community. And I've always been involved in my community and, you know, serving my country. I served in the service in the United States Army, and wherever I lived, I got involved in a community. But that's me, and the thing is, we need more people to do that. And there's no easy answers to that. How you wake the, you know, it's like trying to wake the dead. You can't do it.
Greater
minds than mine will have to come up with some solution to that.
I don't think a lot of people do get involved the way they should get involved, and it's just really,
right.
You know, not at all. Yeah.
But if you come up with a plan, they won't do it voluntarily, that I can assure you.
Okay.
But if you also incur penalties or have some financial inducement, there's got to be some reward. Reward instead of punishment, I guess.
Get involved.
But then, when you start that kind of stuff, then you're going down another slippery slope called too much government.
You look at the House and the Senate, and people go in and they're running, and the way that it works with the pay they get and what they're doing, and if their involvement and they time in and when they retire, there's quite a lot of benefits in that aspect of politics. When you get down into the city, the county and the city level and the community level, it's different, I think, a lot different.
It is, and I guess the biggest excuse for voting lethargy is the fact that they're all corrupt. That's what they think. They're all corrupt, so why should I bother? Things aren't going to change anyway.
People think that
anyway.
A lot, like what my vote, my vote's not going to make a difference.
That's the way they feel.
Right.
You know, you see corruption. Look, I'll give you an example. This is a President Obama. Wasn't too long ago, a few years back, it came to light that members of Congress were allowed to do insider trading, and it was legal. Now, insider trading is illegal for everybody, you know, in the business. Okay?
Right.
So, when it came to light, caused a hell of an uproar throughout the country and the nation. And Obama and Congress, they went to work quickly and passed a thing was called the Stock Act. You can look this up. It's called the Stock Act. And what that Stock Act made it illegal for Congress, members of Congress, to get involved in insider trading. You know, because, let's face it, congressmen may have some inside knowledge about what company's going
to
go
up. But they shouldn't be able to do that. Exactly. They shouldn't be able to do that. That's, there's so many laws that have been passed. Right.
Okay, so they passed the Stock Act. And that was under Obama. And that was cheered. And, oh, my God, that was celebrated, right? In less than a year, it was repealed.
You're kidding.
No. So the Stock Act.
So they can do insider. They can
and now what
do
they
insider.
Made, which was illegal, they made illegal, and they made it legal again. So you
they
see.
They actually can do insider trading?
You look it up. It's called a Stock Act.
I believe you. I just can't imagine. Why do they get to do it and other people go to jail for it?
Well, because they're Congress. And they're corrupt. And they can do whatever they want to do, but listen to you. What they don't do is listen to the people.
Yeah.
Now, if Koch brothers or somebody from Pfizer or something calls them or gets into their office, they'll get up, they'll walk around and pull out the chair for that person to sit down, and they'll listen to them for hours.
It's just so wrong. I mean, it's just like you wonder how, like, the little people, like people like me, how are we going to make changes in that? Because I guess it's when you vote, you know, vote for your Senate and vote in the House. But I just would like to see everybody go home and start over, but that isn't going to happen. You know, it's really difficult to watch this corruption right in front of us, you know.
It is. And, you know, like, it happens in all walks of life, too. I remember when I was doing therapy in a small nursing home in Carbon County here years ago, and we had a requirement that every month the patient receiving the care had to be recertified for continuity of care or discontinued. And I would have a stack of referral sheets ready for review, and every time the doctor would walk by my door, I'd call him in. He'd say, well, I don't have time. I'll get you another time.
Wow.
Well, this one time I stopped him. I said, you know, what do you think about the price of soybeans? He's turned around and walked into my office, and he sat down, and he was there with me for about a half hour.
Wow.
Talking
amazing.
About stock. You know,
yeah,
but
talking
meanwhile,
stock
I was fighting the papers
and
to sign.
Futures and, wow.
So,
that's so funny.
It is. So, anyway, but anyway. I would hope that all those people maybe listening out there understand that I'm just an average person. I'm not an expert in anything.
You've been in this for years and you understand it. And I don't know. It's hard for me when we watch the House and Representatives and we see people doing what they're doing. And I have a problem with these pork bills and all these other bills getting put in and them saying, okay,
mm-hmm.
we're passing this one because it's, you know, the others, it's a lesser of two evils and we need this big one passed and it's within mixed in with all
right.
the others. I don't understand why that system can't be changed. Why we can't really
it's a bartering system within the congressional, within the Congress. What they do is I'll sign your bill, I'll vote for your bill, but if I got to get this writer on there, you know, get this, sneak this in. So people think they're voting for one thing and they're voting for a whole lot of things. Yeah,
and it's so corrupt. It's sad.
And I don't know what's going to come. It's even worse now because of Donald Trump as a leader of the right party, he's a scary person.
Yeah.
You know, I know people are going to him in droves, but I don't know how he's going to be able to change things and make America great again. I would just don't know.
Well, you know, it's funny. The president doesn't have. I mean, the president can only do so much, anyhow, right? They have to
well,
be able
I
to.
Don't, yeah. And the scary part about him is he has shades of dictatorship. You know, it's his way or no way. You know.
Yeah.
In an American Constitution, I don't know how much
I
it
agree.
Would tolerate by his, just taking over everything like that without consent.
His demeanor. But I'll tell you, to watch the Republican Party beat him up the way they are, You're like,
yeah,
you know, for me,
yeah.
I look at it and I go, gosh, if they would have done this on the Democratic side, we might not have had certain Democratic presidents in that we have been in. Not
yeah.
that I'm not knocking anybody. I'm just making a point,
sure.
right? But they go and they do this. It's just, it almost makes you say, hey, stop bullying this guy, you know? Stop it. What are you doing? You know, I just think it looks
dramatic. Oh, yeah, and the same talking with Debbie Wasserman Schultz in the Democratic National Committee. Yeah, you know, here's another little progressive lady, or sheep in wolf's clothing, or wolf in sheep's clothing.
It's terrible.
And she goes out, and they have this payday lending going on in Florida, and which was, I think they made that illegal, and then she wants to legalize that. So, which it's a non-progressive thing because what it does is that people don't have enough money from paycheck to paycheck. They borrow on their paycheck.
Is that what the payday lending is? Okay, so it's a higher interest
and,
rent, higher interest lending?
Well, you would think
yeah.
that a progressive would say no to that because that's nothing more than a
loan shark.
Corporate scheme, you know, to get rich.
Yeah, that's a loan
and,
shark.
So, I mean, she's
outrageous.
Doing that. But anyway, she's been anti-Sanders right along. And she's the Democratic
wow.
National Committee, so they're beating up on him.
Yeah, I've noticed. I've noticed some of the things that these heads are saying just are so unbelievably unprofessional, and they don't have a right to come out and say some of the things they're saying. You know, in Maryland, there was a Donald Trump. I think was at the Berlin High School. One of the districts. I'm not sure whose name it was. On the superintendent, well, not the superintendent of schools, but in the education system, came out and blasted him. And spoke for a lot of people where she didn't have the right to do it. I'm not going to name names, right? And
mm-hmm.
That was just blasted. I mean, things are happening to me that when I'm at my age and I look at it, I'm like, how are we supposed to expect the younger generation, the, you know, 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds, to watch this and start following leadership roles? Because we don't have a lot of leaders right now. We have people
flinging.
Because
they're not getting educated. They're getting indoctrinated.
Totally,
you know,
and it's so unprofessional, and it's so ugly, and you just start to say, wow, it's just too much, you know, it's too much. So we've got about 20 minutes. It goes by fast, doesn't it? We didn't even put in any commercials. We didn't
okay.
even put in any commercials. We've just been rolling. It's going to – I
okay.
love it. What keeps your spirit going to where you've seen all this? You've seen the corruption. You've been involved in the politics. 3 terms as a mayor. That's so commendable. And still, you're still involved in politics. You still get up and get out the door and go out there and you do it, you know. And I guess now you're also involved in, on the board with on the Poconos? I guess, is it the
you're talking about
Penn Forest?
The private development?
Penn Forest Township?
Oh, no. Yeah, Penn Forest Township. My wife is a supervisor on a board of supervisors.
Oh, okay.
That's,
and I thought you might have been involved
political.
In that, too.
There's 5 members on that board.
Okay.
And the only affiliation I have with them is I'm on the nominating committee.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Well, really, really... I'm getting old and I don't have the energy to run out there and be planting signs and knocking on doors and things of that nature. So, you know, I've scaled back somewhat. But my interest is still acute.
Right. Very, very cute. So for somebody not to get totally dismayed, I mean, you'd say just get out there and get involved or start getting into the politics or, go to the committees, get involved in what's going on in your community because, I mean, we always have different, you know, even in real estate, we have people builders want to build in a community. So then the town, you know, they have to get variances and the town gets involved and is invited to the meeting so people can have their say. It's really important to stay updated on what's going on in your community and get a say, you know, or get on boards. Now, when it comes into the real estate side, with association memberships, associations, I've been on some boards over the years and I don't even have the desire to get on them when I'm getting into a community. You know, if it's a condo building, are because
the condo associations and
associations. Lots of times there's just nothing but fighting going on, and you've got people that didn't have any power at work, and all of a sudden they have power in these boards, and it's just a nightmare. So I mean, I guess everybody has to look and see where we can make a difference, where we can get involved and make a difference.
Before
we wake up
boards.
One day and it's all changed, huh?
They're de facto political bodies.
Yeah.
Those condo boards and private community association boards, they're de facto political bodies. They become political, and they become dictatorial, and they become seven people on a board, seven people have different agendas, you know, and they're not really
right.
schooled. They're not schooled on government and things of that nature. They just think they're escalated in their image by going on a board. Anyway, you talk about the real estate tax. Being in real estate a person buying a home in Pennsylvania, for example, are faced with property tax. They're faced with several types of taxes on that property. The first one is their community, the jurisdiction where they live, the municipality tax, then the county tax in which they live, and then a school tax. And the school tax, for example, let me tell you, the municipal taxes, like for example, in Carbon County would be 30 mills.
Okay.
They cannot raise those 30 mills in the next budget year. If they want to raise it 5 mills, they have to go to court and get approved for the 5 mills.
Okay, so
if they
limit.
Want to go the next year, they can't carry those 5 extra mills over. They have to go back to court. Now, get to the school tax. The school tax has no limit on what they can levy on millage.
Really?
Do you understand that, the significance of
yeah.
that? Now, if you buy this property, you sold me a property, say I paid $60,000 for this property. Well, when the property was first built there and taxed, it was taxed at maybe $35,000. And the person that's buying it thinks they're going to pay the tax on what is shown on your records that it was $35,000.
Right.
They don't know that they're going to be billed on the increased cost of that property. And the reassessed price of the property, like that property, you bought it $35,000, is now worth $135,000. That's where you're going to
okay.
be assessed. So it's misleading for that person to think that you're going to pay that low tax. And
wow.
what they don't know is that the school tax can go up and up and up without any ceiling. So property tax reform.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, property tax reform has been on the Pennsylvania agendas for many years. But every time they talk to me, the politicians talk about tax reform to me, it's just code language for increased taxes.
Because you know they're going to shake it up.
Yeah, you wind up paying more. You know. So anyway.
I know in Pennsylvania they've got a lot of different little taxes that add up because some in
yes,
the main,
they do.
The one yeah and then it just keeps tacking on. You really need to know what it is. I had no idea that they could just have unlimited school tax. Not
well, there was an Act 50 that came down that modified that somewhat that they have to notify. But the school districts are pretty. They have pretty much autonomy of how much taxes they want to levy.
Hmm.
And. Unless they may something really big, you know, if they want to build a new school or something like that, they may have to have a hearing. But
that's amazing.
The thing
wow.
is that we in Pennsylvania we need to eliminate property taxes totally altogether, and the only way you can do that, you have to do it through a constitutional amendment, Pennsylvania's constitution. They would have to remove that.
Okay.
Completely, and then they would have to have a companion bill which would show the replacement taxes to cover the cost of education and the cost
so
of
So if you do that, though,
government.
Where are you going to get the money that's appropriated from that, appropriated for that, where is that going to come from?
Well,
if
Pennsylvania, they proposed three things. They proposed a 1% earned income tax and also a real estate transfer tax, which is a one-time deal whenever the buyer and seller share that.
They do that
and,
now, though.
And
a 1%
okay. increase in sales tax. When they went to the Legislative Budget Review Committee, the Legislative Budget Review Committee said that is workable, that it would cover, I'm going back some years ago now, it was estimated $7 billion to cover the cost of education in Pennsylvania and homesteads and farmsteads. But it didn't go anywhere because the Republican Party said, no, we're not going to do this unless you include businesses and business properties, for example, from the same thing. Well, that shoots the cost up to $15 billion.
Mm.
And that was several years ago. So all those costs, of course, today would be changed.
Wow, that's amazing.
But
no,
every election year, you'll hear the politicians in Pennsylvania come out and they're for property tax reform. But it never happens. They're addicted to the property tax. It's a system they don't know how to change.
Who controls this money? The budget and who controls. This has been such a pleasure to have you on. We're almost to the end of the show. We've got about 9 minutes. I'd like to switch over to you. Wrote a book called Final Duty. Tell us a little bit about your desire, how that started, and what it's about. I know it's too much to go over in nine minutes.
Well,
but
let me just give you a little background. When I worked in humanities, I worked with death and dying with geriatrics for many years, and every time one of them would expire, I would see what a waste. What could this person in their dying days could contribute yet to life? But anyway, the book I wrote is a political fiction, and it involves two retired truck drivers who were CB guys on the CB all the time talking politics. They were pretty much knowing what's going on. We discussed it with corruption in politics, et cetera, et cetera. So these two gentlemen decide that they're going to form an organization that would take back America. So what they figured out, because they were both elderly, they figured out what if these people in their last days of life were organized into a group of people that would have one final duty. And what would that one final duty be? All of them had service-connected years. They were all veterans, every one of these people, and retired people. So they served their country and did their duty, but your duty is never over. Your duty never ends when it comes to preserving your democracy and your country.
Wow.
So these two organizers get these people, they develop a network throughout the country of people that are terminally ill that are committed to this, and they hold a meeting and they get these people committed. And then they network from there that when they become aware that they are terminally ill, that they still have some breath, they would be assigned to take out one corrupt politician with them.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I had to laugh because that's great. No, I don't mean. I mean,
well, you know,
a
sideline to that, a contemporary sideline to my thinking about that was, it was in the beginning of the Muslims and their strapping bombs on themselves and committing suicide
bombers. Yeah.
Well, these people, a person that's willing to kill himself for a cause is a hard person to beat. You don't beat these people. It's like the Japanese during the Second World War when they had the kamikaze pilots. It was the last ditch effort. They committed suicide.
Right.
So these people, these Muslims, these young boys are going to get 72 virgins and having whatever motivation, but never happens.
I mean, it's not funny, but you're right.
The American people are so comfortable
Right.
It's hard to get the American people, you know, other than having an absolute crisis, to get involved.
That's true.
So I thought, well, you know, what's a good thing? If we had all these elderly people that are dying, what the hell would they have to lose if they took a gun out and shot a corrupt politician?
No, I'm just laughing because it's hysterical.
They would have
right.
nothing to lose. Because even if they get caught,
they're
and they
at
go
the
before
end.
The judge, and the judge says, life. And he says, thank you, Judge. Thank you, Your Honor.
Right.
But
right, right.
Go into a cell and have television. And a certain time at night, you will send me out for recreation in the yard. And you'll give me a cellmate, and I'll have somebody to socialize with.
Yeah, definitely not.
The plot is around these two organizers and their relationship, and then the relationship of a detective who I named Walters. He gets involved. He's assigned to investigate these crimes by the President of the United States, and he is sent to an autopsy of one of the assassins. And he meets this gorgeous, drop-dead gorgeous pathologist, a female pathologist. And he's just fixated. He can't even concentrate on what he's there for by looking at her beauty. So he falls for her, and that consumes a lot of his time, you know. So then we have a romance in this story, too.
I love it.
And
you can get
it's fiction.
How can you get Final Duty? Can you buy it on Amazon or?
Yeah, it was on Amazon. You can get it on Barnes and Noble. You get it on email or ebook. And InfinityPublishing.com.
Infinity Publishing.
But people should know that this is strictly for entertainment. It's not. You know, it's not anything to be taken for
don't
real.
Don't go out there and start trying to do the Final Duty, you know.
No, don't be doing that. But it's just a thought, you know.
That's fantastic.
And things I had. So I worked on that when I was, actually I had a respite. It was between my involvement with politics and retirement and the association here. So I just had some time, so I wrote this recreationally for my own recreation. And it took on a life of its own.
It sounds like it's a phenomenal book, too, Final Duty.
Well, depends on who's reading it.
Absolutely. And we're listening to, this is Natalie Mullenix from Realty Universal, and this is Carl Fazio. We're talking with Carl Fazio. He's been in politics for years and very involved and always still giving back. And this has been a pleasure. It's been really enlightening. And I hope listeners listening in will start getting involved, because I really think there's more people that are not involved in politics than there are in politics. When I look at the statistics and you know, communities and what people are doing day to day. So,
absolutely right.
Excuse me. So this has been wonderful. We're just about at the end, and I want to thank you for coming on. And so what would you tell the young kids if they're clueless right now, the young ones going through?
Well, I would say to the young people, the future is yours if you're smart enough and willing to reach out and take it. And you've got to take it. You've got to get involved. You know, there's nobody in the cemetery can help you. You've got to get out and do it yourself. You've been given a great country, but it's up to you to make sure that it stays great.
It really is. I think America, United States, is still a great country, isn't it?
It's still a great country, but it's a young country, and with some of the youthful activities, it could be self-destructing.
That's true. We some of the activities have changed totally.
Yeah, so the point where you don't recognize it from the days when I was a kid till up until present times, it's hard to believe, you know, how things have changed morally. You know, socially, morally, things have changed greatly.
I know. We're at the end, so we won't get into it, but they've taken God out of it. They're taking God out of the schools, out of the politics, out of everything. It's just I know we talked about
Thinking. Yeah, well, I want one more comment about God. Are we still on?
Yep, we're on. We've got about 40 seconds. Yep, we're on.
Okay, I would say that God is in your heart, and that's where you want to keep God. And you walk with God in your heart.
Yeah. God, that's a good point. Get it. And it's I hear that. That sounds really good.
There's my
that's
clock.
The hour
it's
clock.
One,
huh?
The hour.
The hour clock.
The Beatles
right
are
the hour.
Playing.
So that's a perfect ending right there. That's perfect for us to sign off with. And thank you so much for being on, and I hope you'll come back again. And I hope people are going to be listening to this and get involved. So,
all
everyone
right.
out there, I wish you peace.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.
I started choking.